Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to yet another episode of The Climate Stand with The Final Stand.
I'm Nanki, and
hosting this episode with me today is Sanat, who is also a member at The Final Stand. And in today's episode, we will be talking about mangroves and their relation to climate change. And to do that, we have with us an expert on the topic, Professor Abhirup Chaudhary. Now, I hand the floor to Sanat to introduce you to our guest for today.
Our guest for today's episode is Dr. Abhirup Chaudhary. Dr. Chaudhary is currently an associate professor and assistant dean at the Jindal School of Environment and Sustainability at the Jindal Global University. He completed his master's degree in environmental system management from the University of Calcutta and went on to complete his PhD from IIT Dhanbad in environmental science and engineering. Professor Chaudhary has extensive experience in the field of environmental science, having spent over a decade studying the environmental threats faced by mangrove forests, and is now an authority on the subject of mangrove ecology. Vis-a-vis mangrove ecology, Professor Chaudhary's research areas also include blue carbon sequestration, traditional knowledge, and wildlife conservation. Professor Chaudhary has had over 20 of his articles published in prestigious Scopus Index journals and edited book volumes, and was awarded the Inder Mohan Thapar Best Researcher Award in 2016 by the Indian Institute of Technology for his research contributions. He has previously served as a research fellow at IIT Dhanbad, project scientist at the Gujarat Institute of Desert Ecology, and as an assistant professor at Manipal University, Jaipur. Professor Chaudhary is also the current joint director of the Environmental Law and Science Advocacy Forum at the Jindal Global University. Professor, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure, Sanat.
Thank you so much, Professor.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction.
Professor, so let's hop right into the topic. So can you start by explaining to us what exactly are mangroves? It's a term we hear often in ecology. So what is their role in the ecosystem? What is their contribution? And why are they important?
Okay, what are mangroves? This is a very interesting question, definitely. Because nowadays, with all the confusion that are going on across the globe, the debates on climate change, how climate change can be mitigated, mangroves actually play a very important role there. But in order to understand mangrove, we have to delve a little into the ecology and biological aspect of it. So it is not, these are not actually a very different kind of plant, like a totally different group of plant or different species of plant. These are plants that have a natural adaptation to grow in a saline or hypersaline condition. So what we understand by the word saline or hypersaline, it means that a condition, a soil, which is almost once a day going to get inundated by tidal waters, and it will have a flow of fresh waters as well as the salt water that has come down from the sea. So they grow in this very interesting interjection where a coast meets the freshwater supplies. So we generally find mangroves throughout the world, in the subtropical and the tropical regions, in the coastal lands. There are different kind of mangrove habitat. It can be a riverine habitat where mainly the freshwater source is the river output that we find in the case of the Gangetic Delta, which is also the world's largest conticus mangrove patch. On the other way around, we also get different other type of mangroves, like that grows in a littoral plains, that grows in the coastal region. And with that aside, let's understand what is mangrove. That is one of the focal questions. Mangroves are plants that can withstand this salinity stress, meaning that the soil is very saline, though it has been very near to water source, but because the water is so saline, they cannot utilize this water. Because this salt, this water is having a lot of salt in it. It cannot take it up directly to its different body parts, mostly the leaves, where it would be utilized for photosynthesis. So they grow, we call it in ecological term, that they grow in a physiologically dry soil. Meaning though the soil is wet, but according to the plant, it is dry. It do not have that kind of water supply because fresh water is devoid. So this plant can grow very effectively in this kind of situation. And now when we talk about how mangroves are important in the debate of climate change, then I will pose a very interesting data. Mangroves have the potential to sequester carbon even more than that of the rainforest. So if I take terrestrial ecosystem, all the terrestrial ecosystem across the globe, in a comparison, mangrove has the highest potential of sequestering carbon. Now the question comes, why? Because mostly I know the main idea would be to understand its role in managing the climate change debate, right? So why mangrove can sequester so much carbon? The reasoning lies in its soil. In case of a mangrove, as the soil is saline, the carbon dioxide or any kind of debris that come into the soil, it do not get decomposed very easily. So it cannot escape out into the atmosphere in form of different type of gaseous carbon emissions. One of them is methane, other is carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide. So all of this degradation happens because there are some microbial system that operates in the soil. But as the mangrove grow in an area where the soil is very saline, microbes grow very less in this kind of soil. So the decomposition process takes long time. So whatever carbon that lands up into the soil, it gets trapped. So the potential of a mangrove is high in order to trap this carbon in the soil along with its biomass. That's a term almost every one of us knows, that what is a biomass. Biomass is the body of that particular plant. It is the wood, the leaves, the branches. These are the biomass. So in case of a mangrove, it not only sequesters the carbon in its biomass, that is done by almost all the terrestrial plant communities, but it can also sequester a huge amount of carbon in the soil. And if I proportionately see, then the carbon sequestered in the soil is far greater than that is sequestered in the biomass. So that is the advantage we have with the mangrove. It has very unique adaptations. It has viviparous germination system. So we generally know that a plant grows from a seed, right? So in case of a mangrove, the seed started germinating. The seed started germinating when it is attached with the mother plant. Then when it is grown to a certain level, then only it falls into the water or the underlying soil. Now, why this adaptation is there? Because the salinity is high. So if a seed lands up in the saline soil, it may not survive. So evolution has its course. The evolution has given it an adaptive trait by which the most important part of its germination takes place when it is already attached to the mother plant. This terminology is called viviparous germination. Along with that, there are many other adaptations that they have. Some of the mangroves have stilt roots, new metaphors are breathing roots, because the soil do not carry any oxygen. So in order for the root to get the oxygen, there is a root system that comes out from the soil. So this root can take air into the root system. So this is called new metaphors. So many such adaptations exist in the mangrove. So whichever plant has physiological or anatomical adaptation to survive in this very harsh, hypersaline, tidal inundated coastline, we call them as mangroves. So hopefully I answered this question.
Oh, yes, Professor, thank you so much. It's really interesting to learn about how complex mangrove systems are. So Professor, the next question that I think that we wanted to ask is that while they do play a role in mitigating certain aspects of climate change, we do often hear in the news that mangrove forests are under threats. So what sort of threats are faced by these mangrove forests, both human and otherwise? Could you perhaps shed some light on that for us?
Yes, you are right, Sanath. Actually, the condition of mangrove forests are not that good, like any other forest system across the world. I'll not say that it is only the problem with the mangroves. It's a problem with any forest region across the globe. So first of all, the human intervention is very high in the mangrove area. Why? Because mangrove grow in the coastal region. Now, if I see a demographic distribution of human across the globe, we will see that most of the population actually reside along the coastline. Okay, so the coastlines has a huge population. It supports a huge population. The reasons are many, varied. Like there are livelihood options more available in the coastal region. People can be fishermen, they can go for fishing. The soil is fertile, so obviously agricultural agriculture can be done very effectively in the coastal region. So over the period of time, if I see the how human population has grown in different areas, we mostly see a congregation of population along the coastlines. And this is the same coastline that is been shared by the mangroves. So there is a direct confrontation between human development and the mangrove lands. Okay, so this is a problem that we see in every part of the globe. So as Sundarban is maybe the world's largest contiguous mangrove forest, it is always in a limelight. But apart from that, mangroves are present in different other areas of the globe. We find mangroves in Indonesia. Indonesia actually has the largest mangrove cover, but they are scattered. They are not like a contiguous patch. They're scattered in their many islands. So similarly, there are mangroves in the African continent, whole of the eastern coast of Africa, there, western coast of Africa, Latin America. Even we find mangroves as far as in the Japan in the north and Everglades or Floridian coast in the New World or the North American continent. So it has a huge distribution. And wherever it is, there is a huge pressure of population also. And in most of the places where we see mangrove to grow, these are also not very socioeconomically marginalized region, where whoever stays in this area, they are not that much wealthy that they can actually allow mangrove to grow and can stop their livelihood system only for the mangrove to grow up. So this problem always comes into the being. Another problem that is there is the natural disasters. Because mangrove has a natural capacity to withstand natural disaster because they grow along the coastline. The adaptation is like that, that they can withstand huge amount of natural disaster, unlike any other plant groups that we generally see in ecology. So what happens? These mangrove also protect the coastline from this natural disaster. So when these mangrove get cleared up, we see a huge repercussion coming up. Because mangroves have a natural capability to consolidate the soil masses, the sediment quality. So whenever there is a cyclone, just imagine a cyclone hitting a particular coastline. What scientifically or geohydrologically, what is going to happen? It is a storm. It is going to bring in immense amount of wind force. So mangroves have steel root system. They can withstand this wind force very easily. Then comes the flushing out of seawater directly into the coastline, where we see that it is breaking the embankment, the flood water is coming and inundating huge amount of land. Mangroves has the power to consolidate the soil masses, so it is very difficult to uproot a mangrove tree. It is not impossible, but it is very difficult to do because they have the adaptation to survive this kind of natural disaster. Now what happens if mangroves get cleared up? Then these areas become prone to erosional system because now there is nothing to stop the natural disaster from coming in. There is nothing to stop or decrease the wind speed of the cyclones, or there is a way to stop the erosion of natural seawater system that erode the plains up. We have seen this thing happening over, there are lots of articles in there in very good journals where mostly focused on the Irrawaddy Delta, where in Irrawaddy Delta during the tsunami time, huge area was got flooded. Why? Because they almost cut the mangrove forest down to zero. So what happened whenever the tsunami waves come up, there is no vegetation in the coastline that can stop the waves or decrease the power of the wave movement. So that is what ecosystem, mangrove ecosystem does. It has several ecosystem services and ecosystem functions which are crucial in this time of really great climate change crisis that we are seeing right now.
Professor, that sounds extremely interesting, and coming from a coastal city myself, I live in Mumbai, I understand when you talk about mangroves and the importance of coastal embankments, especially against inundation. And we often have the need to spend so much of money, government taxes, etc., on embankments, man-made embankments, when, as you've highlighted, mangroves act as embankments themselves. But as Professor, I would also wish for you to stress a little bit on not only how mangroves are playing a role in mitigating climate change, but also in how they themselves are threatened by climate change. For example, rising sea levels, etc. What role is that playing in the ecology of mangroves? How are mangroves affected?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. Thank you. So I will answer this question with a little clarity on how, as a scientist or ecologist, we look into climate change issues. So first of all, the main debate with the climate change is, everybody knows it's happening, right? We are seeing the weather patterns are changing across the globe. We are seeing that lots of the frequency and the intensity of natural disasters are increasing, mostly the cyclones and whatever name you call it, typhoons, cyclones, or hurricanes. Different area has different names. But the intensity and the frequency are increasing. All of these are indicators of climate change. That's the problem. Whenever we try to understand climate change, we always use indicators. We have to find that what is the indirect or direct effect that comes from the climate change. Now comes mangroves in the picture. How climate change impacts mangrove. So first of all, we need to understand that mangroves only grow in the area that has a fairly nice balance between a freshwater flow. It can come from precipitation, meaning rainfall. It can come from the river system and the tidal flow of the seawater into the estuaries. So these are the general parameters where mangrove grows. Now, if I put the climate change dimension into it, the first indicator that I will take in this, in order to understand how it is impacting mangrove, it is a salinity rise. So salinity rise is one of the basic indicators of climate change. How? Let's understand that. Climate change means that there is a condition of sea level rise, right? Because climate change, it will warm the atmosphere. If the atmosphere is warmer, it will melt the glacier systems. If it melts the glacier system, it will increase the sea level. Now, how are we going to understand that the sea level rise is really happening? There, mangrove acts as a very interesting experimental source where we can actually extract the data very easily. How we can do that? Mangroves exist in a place that has for a long, long period of time, a balance between freshwater flow and a saltwater flow. Saltwater comes from the sea. Freshwater flow comes from the river system. Now, when the sea level rise or intensities of natural disaster, particularly the cyclones or typhoons, are increasing in the area, it is pushing a lot of salt water into the estuaries. So what will happen? This balance will shift towards making it more saline. The ecosystem will get more and more saline over the period of time. And this is a direct indicator of climate change and sea level rise. Now, when this thing happens, mangroves are a very fragile ecosystem. It works or it exists in a balance. If this balance is gone, then definitely it is going to be the species that we find in the mangrove, they are going to get replaced. They are going to get replaced by species that are more tolerant to this salinity stress. So what is happening? The entire ecosystem dynamics, we call it community ecology, is going to change. Now let's give an example. I'll give an example from our own work that is currently going on in Sundarbans. So luckily, we can work in Sundarbans. It is one of the most diverse and largest mangrove patch that we share with our neighbor Bangladesh. So in Sundarbans that we can see, once upon a time it is recorded that there are some 50 to 54 species of mangrove that can be found easily in this mangrove land. Nowadays, what is happening, as the salinity level is changing over the period of time, we already published some very interesting paper in peer-reviewed journals on this particular topic, that the salinity level in the most of the parts of the Indian part of the Sundarbans is increasing over the period of time. So this is pushing the true mangroves out of the system and getting replaced by the mangrove. They are also mangroves, but they are a particular type of mangrove that can survive in this particular salinity stress. So it is changing the overall ecological dynamics and the biodiversity composition, the community ecology of the mangrove system. And it has a very large and high repercussions. Because why the repercussions are very high? Because mangrove systems have lots and lots of ecological services, which is very crucial for the human who live around this area to survive. One of them is to protect them from natural disasters. Another is the blue carbon sequestration that we can see in the mangrove lands. So if the ecosystem started changing over the period of time and the composition of the ecology changes, then definitely as a cascading reaction, whole ecosystem will get into a very negative feedback loop system, where slowly the species that are dependent on mangrove for survival, for example, I can give you a very interesting example, the mangrove tigers. The tiger that lives in the Sundarban region. This year is after a long period of time, we've seen one of the greatest cases of tiger straying, meaning the tiger is coming out of the forest into the human lands in the Sundarban region. So it is increasing the man-tiger conflict or a human-tiger conflict, human-wildlife conflict in the region. So all of this is happening. Why? Because in many of the cases, what happens as the species composition started shifting, the herbivores who feed on these mangroves, their population also changes. And these are the prey for the highest level predator, that is the tigers. Now, if the prey is going down the line or their population is decreasing, obviously the tiger needs to stray out of the forest land and find food elsewhere. And that bring us to the huge human-wildlife conflict that goes on in most of these areas. Similarly, when mangrove changes or mangrove community composition started changing, it also impacts its ecological services that I already mentioned. Mangrove has different type of ecological services. One of them is that it has a high source of aquaculture processes, meaning that you will find more fish catches in creeks that are surrounded by mangrove. So it also helps the local people with the livelihood. So we again come into a social dimension where if the mangrove is getting affected, the fish catch will go down, and most of these people who reside in these lands, their mainstay livelihood is fishing. So ultimately it is also going to impact the socioeconomic status of the people who are living in this area. And we can see more out migration. We're already seeing that in Sundarban, a huge out migration happened. People mostly temporarily migrate out of the of Sundarbans as temporary laborers in different other parts of the state, because first of all, the agriculture do not work that well because of continuous disasters that strike this area. Next is the land is ever changing. Disaster strikes always disturb the land. So we will see this movement, migration, out migrations, which obviously is going to jeopardize or impact the socio-economic condition of the region. So we are looking into mangroves. We should not be looking into mangrove only from an ecological dimension, but we can also look it from a socio-economic dimension also. It is going to destabilize the whole system. So definitely, climate change is impacting mangroves everywhere, not only in Sundarban. Sundarban is an experimental plot that we generally use in order to find it is easy to work on because it is a riverine mangrove system, one of the most diverse mangrove plots. But when I have worked in Kutch mangroves, I have seen the same thing happening there also. It is a totally different type of mangrove. There is no freshwater flow from any river. But we have a very large mangrove patch in Kutch. So there also similar thing happened with over the period of time, only the salinity tolerant species are surviving and other species are getting less and less in number. Similar story is echoing in across the globe. If you look into Africa, Everglades, that is Florida, the Australian mangroves, everywhere, climate change is shifting the salinity indicators, which is changing the community composition of this area. So that is how I will be trying to put how climate change is impacting the mangrove.
Thank you so much, Professor, for that answer. So Professor, you have spoken about a lot of the ecological threats that that mangrove forests are currently facing and sort of the human impact that it is having on the communities around these mangrove forests. But there is also this sort of age-old question about, you know, our ecology and development. And Professor, in that line, we were just wondering, what sort of conflict is there between our mangrove forests and human activities? And are there any particular human threats to these forests that are sort of causing a lot of these other problems, especially given the important role that they play in mitigating climate change as well?
Interesting. Yes, thank you. It's a very interesting question. And one of the very important also in that if you want to understand the dimension of what problem mangroves are facing. So first of all, I will bring some of the information that I already given in the first question. That is, mangrove grow in the coastal region. And if I look into the demography, I will see that coastal regions are the most populated one. So now comes down in a very difficult question. If human is residing in that area, development need to be there. But where is the land? The land comes from the reclaiming or cutting down mangrove forest. It has happened in India. I can give you a very, very beautiful example of it. Like the example from Sundarban itself. So if I go back into the history around during the time of 1901 to 1910, I will see that in case of Sundarbans, the whole land, even the area very near to Kolkata, previously known as Calcutta, it is very, very like inland into the Hooghly River system. Even the outskirts of Kolkata was totally covered by mangrove forest. There are scientific evidences of that. It is not something that comes only from literature records. Scientific evidences, fossil records suggest that mangroves have covered all these areas. Then what happens when the British colonial period comes up? They started to see this coastal land as a source of revenue. But that is how British colonial era operates. So they started cutting this mangrove forest up. And whatever we see now, like for example, there are 102 islands in the Indian part of the Sundarban, out of which 54 is actually habitated by humans. Totally divided of forests, totally divided of mangrove lands. And other islands that are now under mangrove cover, which is under now strict conservation statutes. So it is mostly safe, but the areas where human habitation is going on, the only process they can get more land, be it for agriculture, for aquaculture, for any kind of livelihood scheme, they have to cut down mangrove forest to get that land up. So there is a direct confrontation between mangroves and the development that goes on. Similar story is echoing in other part of the globe. Like if I go to just on the western coast, if I go to Mumbai, the similar problem is happening. Mumbai has a huge mangrove area. And these mangrove areas, because if I look into geological history, the present status of Mumbai, it is actually was a separate island. This separate island was connected with the mainland when the township of Bombay during that time started growing up. So in this reclamation process always means that you are cutting huge amount of mangroves land up. I can remember when I was traveling from the airport and crossing into the new Navi Mumbai area, we cross a patch which has a huge dense Avicennia plant. So this is a true mangrove species that we find in this area. But there is a huge problem going on because now roads need to be there because population is increasing in this city. So that region need to be covered up. So how they can get the land? They have to cut the mangroves up. Similar story is echoing in other parts. I can give an example of Kandla Port. Kandla Port is like this port was developed as a kind of a leeway when we lost Karachi during the time of partition. We lost Karachi port, which is a very important port in the Arabian Sea. So we need a subsidiary port so that it can reduce the maritime traffic into the Bombay. So our port was planned, that was the Kandla port. That has a huge region that has a mangrove in it. Now, again, the port, if you need to build up a port, you have to cut this mangrove up. So that is where there is a direct confrontation between the development and the mangrove. And I can go on for hours. Like there is the aquaculture farms coming up that is cutting the mangrove trees. There are different agricultural systems coming up that actually do not understand the mangrove region and it is depleting the mangrove reserves. It is happening everywhere in the globe. So this is a problem we are facing. There is a direct confrontation because of huge population pressure that coastal region has, not only in India, but across the globe, and how mangroves are surviving not only the climate change, not only the different kind of changing geological and geohydrological parameter, but also this huge pressure of human population on them. So that would be my answer.
Absolutely, Professor. And as you mentioned, the Bombay example, I think what we're seeing even today is mangroves being felled for, let's say, the Bombay Coastal Road project that is happening,
yes,
which we are seeing all around us. And like you said, this question of development versus mangroves, it's age old. It's not new. It's been happening from the very beginning. And that actually brings me to my next question, Professor, is that what is being done to find the middle ground between these two opposing sides? Is there anything actively being done to protect mangroves in our country? And if not, what can be done?
Definitely. Okay, this is a very interesting question. What needs to be done? Definitely, a solution needs to be there. See, according to law, environmental law, there are already statutes that have been given for mangrove protection. If any land comes under CRZ, if you look into CRZ guideline, the coastal regulatory zone guideline, then the mangrove should not be touched. Mangrove cannot be felled also. But the problem that has that comes up, that only laws are not enough. That's what a problem that we've seen in also in other dimensions. Like I can give a very simple example. There are very strong laws on, crimes against women. Decreasing the rate of crimes against women? I don't think so. I mean, that do not translate to that way. Similarly, there are laws. Definitely, there are laws that can protect the mangroves. But until people are aware of the services they are giving us and what will happen if mangroves are not there at all, till that time, I think none of the laws, none of the policies can actually do any sort of differences in the field level. Because here we are talking about, there are a lot of socio-political complexity that comes into the picture. So whenever we say that, yes, the mangroves are under CRZ guidelines, so you should not be cutting mangrove up. But who are cutting the mangrove? Who are the primarily responsible for that? These are the local people who are living around those areas. Now, they are all socio-economically marginalized. Most of them are. For them, their 1 month income is more important than understanding what kind of nature of carbon sequestration is happening in the mangrove lands and how it is important in the global debate of climate change. We have to understand that. And these people are also a very potent vote bank for whatever politics that goes on in whatever state or whatever country as of that. So whenever the implementation of this kind of laws come into the picture, there is a big gap that I have seen. So this is one of the greatest questions that comes up. Now, how to solve this issue? It is always advisable that we need to bring community into the picture. Because only making laws and making policies sitting in a AC room will not help. We have to understand the socioeconomic condition of the people. I can give you a lot of examples. Like, for example, in Sundarbans, in last, 4 years, we have continuous natural disaster that are happening. It is inundating land after land. And we are talking about people who are socioeconomically marginalized, ostracized section of the society, who came and settled in this land long back or during the time of partition. So where they can go? So whatever law is there, if it is directly hampering their day-to-day livelihood system, it will not work. So there is a huge chance where the awareness should be made to the local people, and they should be given an alternative livelihood option, which is a green option that should not infringe upon or reclaim. They need to reclaim mangrove lands or cut mangroves. There are a lot of local myths that are there. Like, for example, one of the very potent myths that I find in Sundarbans a lot, if you plant a mangrove tree or mangrove forest, tiger can stray there. Because there is a very traditional belief, and in some cases, if I look into the settlement history of Sundarbans, I will also see that in the initial period, there were huge cases of tiger attacks, because those lands are almost dominated by tigers, crocodiles. So there is an idea that if there is a mangrove plantation, tiger can stray up. And it is not entirely wrong also. This winter, we have seen some 6 to 7 straying cases of tiger, and every time tiger followed the mangrove plantation route that has been done in the habitated region, because that is easy for them. They can camouflage easily in that area. So there are a lot of very complex problems that comes up whenever we try to implement the conservation concepts in case of mangrove. and how we can convince the community on that. And then comes on a different note, like, for example, if some industry is setting up near the coastline, some port activity going to happen, many of them do not have any idea that what actual benefit ecosystem, the mangrove ecosystem gives. And they always try to find loopholes in the law by which they can cut the mangrove and turn it into something else. Okay, because for them, that moment benefit is more important than what benefit they will get from mangroves over a 100-year span of time. So these are some of the dimensions that I'll bring into play.
Thank you so much, Professor, for that answer. Professor, now you had mentioned some myths and misinformation that is rampant when we discuss mangrove forests and mangrove ecology and how that is sort of hampering the sustainability and the maintenance of these forests. So, Professor, do you believe that the potential that mangroves have to mitigate climate change is fully recognized? And more importantly, how would you suggest, as a closing note, that people can educate themselves about the connection that mangrove forests have with climate change, and how can they help spread this information as well?
Interesting question, Sanan. Yes. So, first of all, I will address the question that how this problem is should be taken to the community. So, first of all, very less number of people actually is aware of the mangrove system. For example, if I ask anybody a question, which ecosystem in terrestrial landscape has the potential of highest carbon sequestration? The first question that will come up is the rainforest. So many of the people are not even aware that there is an ecosystem that can sequester at least 50 times more carbon dioxide than rainforest, and that exists in the coastline. So there is a big gap. First point. Second point that comes up, the research in mangrove is very limited because we don't find mangrove in very many places across the globe. It is mostly congregated in areas or in countries which are not that much economically, I should say, developed, like the developed nations, so that they can actually allocate a lot of fund in the research and understanding how mangrove ecosystem works or how it can be used as a tool in the fight against the climate change. So that is another very big issue there. A third issue that comes up, whenever we try to understand mangroves, everything is present in form of scientific literature. Scientific literature, as all of you may be aware of, they are a little complex to understand because there are a lot of scientific stuff there, like how the soil works, how the soil microbiology works, how the different chemical parameters of soil influence the mangrove growth, and apparently also how mangroves impact the whole carbon sequestration. We call it blue carbon sequestration in the soil system. So this kind of scientific literature will not be easy for a community level people. For example, say the people who stays in this land, for them to understand. Like I remember when I go to Sundarbans and I try to tell the local fisherman, see, this soil, the black color mud, it is actually so rich in carbon. I mean, it is one of the highest carbon sinks. It has limited or almost no meaning to the people around them because they are now thinking about how they can earn their next day's livelihood. So it really makes no sense. It is very difficult. So there is a big gap between the whatever knowledge that is generated by the academia and science in one sector and how this knowledge percolates to the community level, where it is needed, where the people need to know. Because whatever experiment we do in a lab, whatever kind of big articles we come out with, like how mangrove can sequester carbon, how important they are, how their conservation is important. Ultimately, if the local community do not agree to conserve, it is not going to work. We have to understand that. The conservation paradigm has shifted over the period of time. In few areas, I'll give you a very simple example. Again, the same example of Sundarbans. Because of the geological conditions there, it's a delta. So in Sundarbans, we can see there is a clear demarcation between the island that is habitated by humans and the island that is totally covered by forests and habitated by tigers. So this kind of model, and we have lots of legal statutes on those particular forest stuff. It is a national park. It is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is a biosphere reserve. There are three sanctuaries. Recently, it has also been designated. It is a tiger reserve or a tiger project. And recently, it is also designated Ramsar site. So all these legal statutes are there. So that forest is almost untouched. It is not reclaimed. It cannot be reclaimed because it's totally like a fortress conservation model is working very well. But if I am looking into other mangrove areas, like scattered mangrove of Indonesia, which is actually larger in area-wise than Sundarbans. So that has an interlinking human habitation along with the mangrove system. In this case, if the people who are living in this area, they are not aware that why they should be protecting the mangrove, only laws, policies do not actually work that well, according to me. And another point that I like to pose here is the livelihood system that is mostly used by the people residing along this mangrove lands, it needs to be more greener, and it can be possible. We have done this experiment directly in Sundarban with 2,100 families, where we have given them a lot of options of green livelihood system and make them take part personally in mangrove plantation movement. And these mangroves have worked wonderfully well during this recent cyclone, Amphan. The area that were covered by our mangrove patch, which is, it was planted in 2012, now it is 2000, Amphan hit sometime around 2020. So when it hit the land, this mangrove actually protected the embankment, protected the households. So they can understand very well that it has the potential to save them from natural disaster, at least reduce the impact of the natural disaster. But you have to give this 10 years time. Or 8 to 10 years time for the mangrove to grow up. So our particular population, which is suffering extremely under socioeconomic disparity, for them giving this 8 years time is a difficult task. So this socioeconomic disparity needs to be handled for the coastal community who are residing along this mangrove land. If I really want to look into a mangrove to be conserved in an effective way, and that is not limited only to India. It is limited to everywhere across the globe, wherever we find mangroves, be it Pacific Islands, be it African countries, or be it Latin America, or Caribbean, or Everglades, or Australian mangroves, everywhere. This is the same story that keeps on repeating. So we have to bring community into the conservation venture. Then only mangroves can be conserved.
Thank you so much, Professor. I think this conversation today has not only taught Sanat and I more about mangroves, but also it'll also educate our listeners. I think we'll all look at the capability of mangroves more than anything differently. Here at the Climate Stand with the Final Stand, we always prioritize knowledge over anything, knowledge of new ways that we can contribute in the efforts to mitigate climate change. And now that the mangrove angle of it has been uncovered, I think that gives us a lot to think about, not only about mangroves, but there are so many other things related to climate change that we can do that we have not yet discovered. And lastly, thank you for taking the time and thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you, Nancy and Sanat.
Also, thank you to all our listeners for tuning in, and we hope you reach out to us with any thoughts or feedback you may have. While there is a lot to learn about the climate crisis, we hope you stay restless and curious and join us every alternate Saturday to learn a little bit more about it right here at the Climate Stand with the Final Stand.